This podcast is part of Mishmash Media. Hey, buddy.
Hey, how's it going?
Very, very good. Welcome to another episode of Curbcast. My name's Ivan.
And I'm Stephen.
And every week we get an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm in chronological order, and we talk about every scene and we give our takes and we talk about the interesting world that revolves around Larry and the other secondary characters from Curb Your Enthusiasm. We are halfway through season five, my guy. Lewis needs a kidney, and yeah, we find out that, you know, we found out in last episode, Kamikaze Bingo, that Lewis needs one, but this one really delves into it.
Yeah, I mean, it's come to the point where, you know, they're testing for a match, and we discover whether Larry's a match or not, and you know, and the consequences of it. So yeah, sometimes the title's a bit vague, you know, like the Christ Nail. You're like, well, what could that be about? Or Kamikaze Bingo, like, you can't tell, you know, you might have an indication, but it's not like you're going to be able to figure out exactly what. Whereas this one, it's just like, well, Lewis needs a kidney. Lewis is a well-known secondary character. They established last episode, like you said, that he needs a kidney. They planted that seed, and then in this episode he's going to need a kidney. It's all kind of even though we don't know the details of the episode until we watch it, you can kind of figure out where they're going to go.
Indeed, yeah, and it makes perfect sense. So it's basically, yeah, the title explains exactly what happens.
Yeah, exactly. So, right,
Lewis needs a kidney.
Yes. And if you need a kidney, you can email us a bit
sorry, you got me.
No, you're right. Probably if you do need a kidney, probably, you know, register for the organ donation list or whatever, you know, is relevant in your part of the world. Don't email us, we can't help you. We have an email address though, curbcastpod@gmail.com. we're on social media, Reddit, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Those details are in the show notes. You can support us by rating us or reviewing us on your podcast app of choice. It really helps with search results and visibility, and spreading the word as well. Tell a family member or a friend or colleague or anyone you might know who likes Curb or even Seinfeld about us. That would be cool too. And finally, financially, you can support.
Yes, and you can sell a kidney to do this, by the way.
You can, if you want to. If you like us that much and you want to sell an organ, by all means. We're not going to promote it, but we're not going to dispute it either. And you can donate your illicit kidney funds to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/MishmashMedia, which is the name of our burgeoning podcast network, for as little as $1 a month, or whatever you get for a kidney on the black market these days.
Probably like 1/100th of a kidney.
Yeah.
No, probably way less, probably like 1,000.
Probably a couple of cells, or, you know, like a little or something. I don't know. Cells are like the only way I can think about dividing a kidney that down that far.
Yeah, you just extract some cells out of it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's like a dollar's worth.
Exactly. You know, maybe a tiny, like a bit of kidney juice, or I'm sure there's a bit of goo that would come out of it or something.
You don't even have to sell your kidney. You can just, you know, get some cells like needled out. Why not?
Yeah, do a biopsy and sell them. I'm sure there's some clandestine lab that could use those to do something nefarious with. If you're that sort of person, and because you watch Curb, maybe you are. I don't know. You can donate those illicit funds to our Mishmash Patreon, patreon.com/MishmashMedia. And yeah, that would be awesome.
But you don't have to do that either, of course. If you just want to give $1 a month, that's more than enough too. That's fine. And Mishmash Media is our burgeoning podcast network. So yeah, can't give you anything, any bonus stuff at the moment. And that's why our pledges are quite low at the moment. But eventually we will give you.
I feel like if someone who listened to this show was willing to give themselves a biopsy or remove a kidney, they wouldn't expect anything from us. Like, they're so committed to us that they'd be happy to do that without any return. So if you're that person, thank you. And to anyone else, sorry, we can't give you anything for now.
Yeah. If you loved us that much, you'd give away a kidney. I think you need to reassess your life.
Look, seriously. yeah. It's like there are way better reasons to, you know, way better ways to spend your time. And I'd probably be a bit creeped out. I'd probably shut down the podcast and go, you know, this, I don't feel comfortable.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't either. I don't want to be responsible for some guy like bleeding out or something.
No, exactly.
I'd be like, you know, it's fine. But anyway, no, we certainly don't need a kidney. So no donations of that kind. No organs, please. That'd be great.
No.
Anyway, Lewis Needs a Kidney, season 5, episode 5. This one aired in the US on October 30th, 2005. Larry learns that Richard Lewis is bedridden and needs a kidney transplant. Larry and Jeff both turn up as positive matches for Lewis, but neither one are willing to give up their precious organ that easily. A bit of trivia about the episode, Steve, a reference to Seinfeld in the episode The Statue from season 2. It contains a nearly identical joke about whether it's good or bad to be the last one selected in Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe.
Yeah.
Yeah, because in the episode, you know, Larry thinks, you know, when he's, you know, pointed to, you know, we find out that he's it, he thinks that he's out, but everyone says he's actually in. He's the guy who needs to donate his kidney. There's also a debate.
Yeah, which causes a bit of tension later on in the episode. What do you think?
No, if you're it, you're it. You're the donor.
Yeah.
I agree with everyone else. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. I think Larry is trying to use the word out as a way out, because it's literally mean like you're eliminated, you don't count anymore. And I've never heard out, or I can't remember what they say, like you are out, out. I've never heard that ending to anything in anime.
I've just heard you are it.
Yeah, you are it. Which, yeah, and to me, it means you are the person. But if I heard you are out, that to me, I can kind of understand where Larry's coming from. I just think he's trying to figure out any way to get out of donating a kidney. But I think he's also relying on the word out specifically, because out means, well, you're eliminated. So you're out of the game. So whoever's left is the person who gives the kidney.
No, he tries that, but no one agrees with him.
No,
no one, not even Cheryl.
No.
Not even his wife.
No.
Anyway, in the first scene of Lewis Needs a Kidney, at Larry's office, he is calling for his PI, Omar Jones. The receptionist is asking what the call is about. Larry says it's a private matter, as the receptionist tells him to control his levels, as Larry asks what the details of her last conversation was, and he hangs up. Larry walks to his car and can't find his keys. He realizes that they're locked inside. He calls Jeff to come get him as he tries to enter a Jack in the Box, which is just nearby. A Jack in the Box, for those who aren't from North America, it's like a fast food shop. Kind of like, you know, McDonald's, Hungry Jack's, Burger King, you know, those sort of ones. Just like, yeah, just like a fast food joint.
Yeah, burger joint.
Burger joint, yeah, that's it. He goes to the drive-thru, which is still open, and he stands behind the cars to wait for food as other cars drive behind him. He goes to order food at the booth, and the seller says over the intercom that he has to actually be in a car to order, as Larry says he's starving. After a bit of toing and froing, he walks off. He asks cars behind him if they can order food for him, and he spots a driver who offers to help. They have a bit of a chit-chat, and he offers to take Larry into his car to help him order food. So, yeah. Larry, yeah, I mean, you know, he's starving, and he can't, you know, he could have probably explained to the intercom that, you know, his keys are locked in the car and he's a bit hungry, you know, can he still buy it? But I guess they just have, like, a policy, you know, for drive-throughs where you have to be in a vehicle of sorts.
Yeah, I think it's a safety policy. You know, like if a car runs you over, if you're in a driveway that's got cars constantly going through it, I think that's the basis of their policy.
Yeah, yeah. So no one can, like, sue or anything.
Yeah, exactly right.
It's a bit weird though, Steve, where, like, the restaurant is shut, but the drive-through is still open. Could that possibly be for maybe security reasons or something?
Yeah, could be.
So there's no, like, hold-ups or anything?
Yeah, I mean, I've never heard that before. I thought once a shop shuts, it all shuts. Maybe it's just a case of, you know, after a certain hour that people just don't walk in, you know, because people who are going to come to the restaurant, you know, are going to be driving around. So it's just a waste of time having people out the front and keeping it all open because no one turns up anyway, but people still come to the drive through. Maybe it's that. I don't know. It could be for security. You know, it's maybe it's like when service stations or, gas stations, you know, they have their night windows, I think after midnight in a lot of areas. You can't walk into the shop. You can only get stuff through the window because it's more secure.
Yes, yes.
Maybe it's something like that.
I was
that.
Thinking that too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just so there's no, it reduces the risk of, like, robberies.
Yeah, exactly. It's easier to manage a robbery if someone points a gun through a drive-through window as opposed to walks in the shop.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so it's more of a security issue. Yeah, no, yeah. That makes sense. He is eating with the guy in the parking lot of Jack in the Box, and his name is Pete. Larry asks what Pete does for a living. He says that he is in a transition and he used to work alongside a dental hygienist. He says that there were some issues and he has been drawn to landscaping. Larry spots a collection of porno magazines at the back, and Pete claims that they're not his. Jeff goes to the window and Pete jumps in fright. So we find out later that Pete is, like, a felon, so I'm guessing he stole that car then.
Yeah, probably. Or he's just, maybe he lives in his car and he just spends his days jerking off to his elaborate porn collection. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. No, I suspect he probably stole the car that night.
Yeah, no, that would
make sense. Because he didn't know the pornos were in there.
Yeah, that would make sense.
And it makes sense because Jeff goes to the window and Pete jumps, so he thinks it's a cop.
Yeah, that's true. So
it makes sense. And we find out that Pete is a felon with so many different aliases. Yeah.
He's not just Pete.
No, he's not just Pete. He's Peter the Talk. He's got, like, all these other names. Conspirator, all these ones, which we find out later. Jeff sits in the back with them and he's eating food. He tells Larry that Richard Lewis needs a kidney and he is unsure if there is a donor. And Jeff says that a potential donor needs to be tested. And Larry is tuning out in shock and confusion. We've mentioned several times, Steve, that Richard and Larry are frenemies. But do you think this is, like, one of the only times where Larry feels sad for his friend? Is that why he's tuning out, or he's a bit, or is he worried that he has to go get tested?
Probably a bit of both, I guess. You know, even though their friendship can be contentious, you know, I still think there is some love there. And Larry's not, like, a malicious person who wants people to suffer. You know, I think even if someone was a complete stranger, like, Larry is ignorant and thoughtless and selfish and, you know, is a lot of things, but I don't think he actually wishes genuine harm on people or isn't sympathetic or concerned if they need a kidney transplant. Like, he's not lacking in humanity entirely, you know, and I think he would feel that way even if Richard was a stranger. So yeah, and, you know, I think they're friends first and enemies second, ultimately. If they were enemies first and friends second, I don't think that they would be in each other's lives anywhere near as much.
No.
You know, but I think it's like a friendship that's just got a lot of issues as opposed to a contentious relationship that has, yeah, I think they're friends first and enemy second, so that's why he's concerned.
That's why he's concerned, yeah, no, that makes sense. So yeah, it's probably a mix of the testing and he's worried for his friend.
Yeah, and
they go back from, like, to the New York days.
Exactly, and Larry, you know, as usual, you know, like I said, he's not an evil person. He doesn't wish anyone genuine harm, I think, especially his, you know, his old friend. But in typical Larry form, he always asks himself, he never puts the other person first and only first. He always asks, you know, even if he shows concern in this case towards Richard, the second question he usually asks himself is, how will this affect me, or how can I benefit from this? So, you know, he's got a selfish motivation or a selfish concern, which is, well, how will this, not that worrying about donating a kidney isn't valid, like, of course, you know, even if you're doing it out of the goodwill, you're doing it out of goodwill, obviously it's going to cause some concerns. It's like, well, will I survive the surgery? Like, it's not invalid to be concerned about it, but you know, he's equally as concerned about wanting to get out of it or doing as little as possible, as well as being concerned about his friend. You know, it's complicated.
Yeah. There's a lot of emotions.
Yeah.
Which is why he blanks out. Yeah. Makes sense. The next day, Larry is having lunch with Richard at a diner. Richard laments the fact that there are no matching donors for him. Larry asks if he has any relatives, and he asks about his cousin, Lewis, who works at a Jack in the Box. Richard says that his cousin Lewis is crazy and he won't ask him. And he makes a point saying that Lewis said that, you know, if he's dying, he's willing to offer Richard all of his organs. So keep that in mind for later on.
Yeah, he's an organ donor. I think he says that he's happy to donate his organs after he dies, but not a minute before he dies.
Not a minute before he dies, yeah. So keep that in mind for later on. Richard suggests that a good friend should test for a match, and he's kind of like, you know, giving Larry a bit of the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, sort of. He's kind of like, a good friend, you know, he looks at Larry,
yeah,
should test for a match.
Yeah, he's indirectly trying to say, go get the test.
Go get test and see if we have the same blood type, yeah. Later that evening, Larry is in bed with Cheryl as he is worried about being tested. And he says that he should get healthier friends. He says stuff like, you know, if they have to go to the hospital, you know, they get something wrong with them, I should just cut them off. I should just make a clean break for it. And he says, even if Cheryl gets sick, and Cheryl's like, oh, great. You know, like, you know, if I get sick, you'll just leave me. Thank you. You know, and she makes a point like, this is what marriage is about. You know,
yeah,
and doesn't help.
And it's probably adding salt to the wound. Like, even though Larry, I think, you know, when it came down to it, if Cheryl needed a kidney, I think he would go through with it. He's obviously just sort of making a point. I think he's just trying to make a point that I'm reluctant to do this because I don't really want to, sort of thing, you know, which is fine. But from, you know, from Cheryl hearing that, it probably adds salt to the wound where he said that he wasn't married to her for eternity. It's just, you know, while we're alive. And then after that, I'm freewheeling and single.
Freewheeling in heaven.
It's like I didn't agree to eternity. It's like, just, you know, while we're on the physical plane, I'm yours, but once we've transcended into the spiritual world or the afterlife, that's up for debate. Now to hear that, well, I won't even give you an organ while we're in the physical world, Cheryl's probably like, oh god, like, how little do you want to do in this marriage?
Yeah, exactly. We've seen all the warning signs for their marriage, yeah, for, you know, since season 3, season 4.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Larry's kind of being, I think he's just using a bit of dark humor in a way of like, well, no, I wouldn't do it to you. I wouldn't give my kidney to you, to make a point that he's concerned or he's reluctant. But yeah, it's, you know, it's an indication that, yeah, things aren't going so well.
No, they're not. And even Cheryl's just like, oh, thanks.
Yeah. Thanks.
She tells him that donating the kidney would be a nice gesture as they hug and begin to snuggle. Larry requests sex after snuggling because he says that snuggling usually leads to sex. Cheryl says that you don't have to have sex every time you snuggle. As they continue, he grabs her behind to try and, you know, get her turned on, and she changes her mind about the snuggling and goes to sleep. As Larry tries to justify grabbing her bum, you know, it's just like, it's part of the snuggling.
Yeah, it's first the snuggle, then the bum grab, then the, you know, what we all want. I think this is another subtle sign that, you know, in the last few seasons we've seen more cases of Cheryl bothering Larry for sex. You know, she's the one raising concern, like, we don't have enough sex. In this episode, she seems to be knocking it back more. So either they've increased their sex life and Cheryl doesn't want any more after complaining the last few seasons that they're not having enough, or she just doesn't want to have sex with Larry as much, and that now it's flipped where Larry's the one bugging her because, you know, she's in her mind, even subconsciously, she's sort of departing the marriage. You know, she's less turned on by him, she's just less attracted to him, etc.
Probably that, but probably also as well, like, they're talking about their friend's life.
Yeah.
You know, know, and Cheryl's like consoling her husband, saying, you know, if you happen to test positive and, you know, test, be like a match, and then you donate your kidney, it's a wonderful thing you're doing. And, you know, like, it's not really like a sexual moment.
No.
You know what I mean? Like,
but you can.
You know, it's kind of like, it's a very sentimental moment. And, you know, sometimes you have those moments with your partner or wife where, you know, like, it's not sexual, but, you know, you kind of like, you know, you talk about something and then you like, you embrace each other, and it's a wonderful feeling. It's nice. Like Cheryl describes it as nice and warm and a warm feeling and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can just leave it at that.
No, that's a good point as well. I just think that if she was still desperate for sex because Larry's not putting out, I think she would probably put her, you know, her ethical concerns aside of like, well, should we have sex in this moment just to have sex? I think she would think, well, I don't get many opportunities to fuck, so we'll fuck. Even though
it's- So it sounds like you said their sex life is pretty much back on track now.
Well,
either
Larry's giving her more sex and she doesn't require any more, so she's in more of a position to knock it back rather than request it. Or it's either one of three options. What you said, that it's just inappropriate regardless. She's having enough sex and she doesn't want any more because Larry's, you know, upped his game. Or she just doesn't want to have sex with Larry as much, period, because, you know, of their slowly failing marriage.
Yep. So it's one of the three. Yeah. Any of those could be plausible.
Yeah. I just thought it was an important sort of shift of dynamics where Larry, you know, Larry's the one normally, you know, wanting less sex the last couple of seasons, but now it's flipped a bit.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, no, I know. But the slow decline, it's declining even slower, like even more now.
Yeah, totally.
Back at Larry's office, he calls and speaks to Richard's receptionist, who asks what it's in regards to. Reflecting on what happened in the last call with Omar's receptionist, he decides it's time to say what it is about. He tells her about the kidney transplant. The receptionist is shocked at the news. She says he never said anything, or Richard never said anything to her about it, as she starts crying. Larry can't believe that Richard never told her about this. Larry tries to calm her down over the phone, and she's still crying and hangs up. So Larry, you know, after what happened with Omar's receptionist, he'd assumed that Richard, you know, told his receptionist about his kidney transplant. I mean, it's quite a big deal having like kidney disease or kidney failure or something.
Yeah.
You know, you tell your receptionist, but obviously, yeah, we find out Richard wanted to keep it private, and not even his receptionist, like his PA, personal assistant, I should say, not even she knows about it.
Yeah, which is confusing to me. Like if I'm a busy enough or important enough person to require a PA or a receptionist, and I was going through the process of trying to find a kidney and going for tests, and, you know, like he'd be talking to a lot of doctors, he'd be getting a lot of calls from the donor list, and, you know, there'd be a lot going on,
and she'd be making like appointments for him and stuff too.
Yeah, exactly. You think you'd be like, look, this is happening, you're going to get a lot of calls about it, you know, if this doctor calls, put him through, etc. You think that he would keep her in the loop because it's a pretty pertinent issue with a lot going on, and she would be, like you said, she would be getting a lot of, like, she would be in the middle of it. So it's interesting to me that he kept it from her. You know, maybe he's just wanting to deal with it privately because that's just how he wants to deal with it, which is fine too. Like, there's no proper way to do it. It's just surprising to me that I would keep, if I had a long-term secretary that I saw as like a friend and more so than just an employee, I wouldn't feel uncomfortable sharing that news with them, not just because they're going to be dealing with it professionally and, you know, it's going to be, they're probably going to find out anyway, but also just because, well, you know, this is a person I trust, so I'm happy to share the news with them. So yeah, it was different to how I would have handled it. That's all.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, someone close like that, like his personal assistant.
Yeah. You know, like she probably knows everything about him. Like she, you know, she would know all of his dirty laundry, really.
Well, we find out Antoinette, Larry's PA, knows everything.
Yeah. Not that, like
8 years worth.
Not that having a kidney transplant is something to hide or to be ashamed of, but, you know, she would know him intimately, his every part of him for the most part. So yeah, it's just, I just thought it was interesting that Richard chose to keep this from her. And obviously, you know, and I think it, you know, the way she reacts shows that she obviously cares for him. He's not just a boss, like he's a friend, or, you know, there is some level of intimacy that, you know, like platonic intimacy there. You know, the fact that she's, I mean, she would be upset anyway, but I think she reacts in a like almost as if he's a family member, like, oh my God, this is so shocking, I'm devastated. Like if I worked for a company or for someone and my relationship was just professional, obviously I'd be upset, but I don't think I'd be beside myself. I'd be more... You know, I'd keep it together a bit more, I guess.
Yeah, you keep it together, but, you know, they're basically, you know, like a friend.
Yeah, I think so. And I think she's probably a long-term secretary too. So, oh, sorry, PA, or, you know, I can't remember what her official title is, but he's a long-term employee of Richard's. She's a long-term employee of Richard's. So, of course, it's going to affect her on a personal level.
Do you think Richard's keeping it private because he might be in denial of having kidney problems? Because, you know, he's kind of like, we see in earlier seasons, he's like reformed, you know, because Richard Lewis was known to be into drugs, like the real-life Richard Lewis.
Yeah.
You know, been to lots of drugs and alcohol over the decades, and, you know, in the Curb universe anyway, he kind of gives up on all that, and maybe like all that abuse is kind of catching up to him, and he needs kidney, and maybe he's thinking, no, I've been healthy for the last, you know, so many years, basically since season one of Curb, so let's say the last 5 years in the Curb universe, and now suddenly he's getting all these issues. You think maybe he's thinking to himself, I've done all this healthy stuff, but my kidneys are now starting to fail me.
Yeah, I think
do you think it could be like something like that, like a bit of denial or a bit of like, oh, you know, I'm probably healthy, like why is this happening?
Probably a bit of shame as well, like, you know, even,
a bit
though,
of shame,
even
yeah.
though he's been sober for, I think he says in this episode, 11 years, he says it a bit later yeah. on, you know, like there'd still be a lot of regret and shame, like even though in his 11 years sober, things have gone pretty well. Like he's gotten his life back together and he's, you know, he's doing well enough that he needs a PA. Like I'm not doing that well. I don't need a PA. He's obviously kicking some goals and doing well financially, but it's still, you know, when the chickens come home to roost, in this case, I'm guessing his liver was less healthy at this age because of his previous drinking, even though he'd been sober for 11 years. It's a reminder of past regrets. It's like, well, 11 years down the line, even though I've done the wrong thing, the bill always comes, you know, the check always comes, as they say. So I think it's just, yeah it's a reminder of that you can rarely escape consequences, even if you turn yourself around like he did. There'll be some consequence down the line like this. So yeah, I think it's that, and maybe he just wants to keep it as close as possible for now because it just saves the amount of awkward conversation. Like Richard doesn't seem like the sort of person who would want to have like when you go, you know, when you're going through something hard, you want to keep it as, sometimes you just don't have the mental capacity or the emotional bandwidth to have the conversation over and over again with several different people. Like it's,
I do,
you know, exactly.
I know that very well.
So maybe it's a bit of that. Like maybe he thinks, like, I'll just tell the closest people, my closest family and friends, because I don't have the capacity to just talk about this with every single person. It might be a bit of that. Who knows? I mean,
yeah, I know the feeling. I know that very well.
Exactly.
No, you make a good point. Yeah. Sometimes you feel like that when you've gone through something big.
Yeah. And maybe it's also, he doesn't want to talk about it more widely until there's something a bit more solid to talk about. Like even though he knows he needs a kidney transplant, maybe he wants to find out, you know, or he wants to get a donor first, so at least he can tell people, and there's a bit of good news as well, like, well, I've got this issue, but I've also got a donor, like, so things will be okay. So it's a better conversation, it's a bit more hopeful. I don't know.
Yeah,
there's many reasons, but yeah, we could speculate all day, I think.
Yeah, no, it's fair. But yeah, I feel like there's a bit of denial for Richard.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, denial, shame, just wanting to keep it close to his chest.
And thinking, like you said, thinking he's gotten out of all this, and then suddenly it's come back to
him. Yeah, you know, there's all sorts of reasons.
Yeah, quite sad.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
It is. Richard is lamenting Larry for telling his receptionist or PA about the transplant, and that she is upset and may quit because she is in shock. Richard wonders what to do about this as Larry offers to take a test. Richard says that he should have jumped on it the other day at the diner when he asked. And Larry, as they're talking, Larry gets a call from the LAPD about Pete. So, And Larry goes back to Richard and says, oh, like, what if I needed a kidney? Would you have just, like, jumped in early? And Richard's like, yeah, I would have. You know, it's like, I would have, you know, at least made the offer to go get tested, yeah.
Yeah.
So it took, like, Larry's just trying to not get involved with it.
Yeah, he's trying to be there for his friend without committing too much.
No. I just love how, like, Larry tries calling Richard out, and Richard's like, no, I'd go for a test for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would. Like, straight up. It's like, yeah, sure.
He might also be doing that just to stick it to Larry, just to say, well, you know, I'm a better person than you. He might.
Maybe, yeah.
You know, like, there is that constant sort of tension and competitiveness in their relationship. So it might be just another opportunity of, like, well, I would do the right thing. Would you?
Yeah, would you? Yeah, yeah. Maybe he doesn't mean it. He's just, like, trying to stick it to Larry.
Yeah.
Jeff and Larry are in the police office waiting for Pete as Larry tells Jeff that he will take a test. He asks why Jeff won't be doing one. Jeff tries to shrug it off, as Larry says he should do it, as he is also Richard's friend as well as his manager. Jeff says that Richard isn't that close to him. Larry, he decides to play the employee card to Jeff. And he says that, Jeff, you're my employee. And he implies that he has power over him, as Jeff calls Larry out for trying to back out of the test. So Larry, you know, Jeff and him, you know, are good friends. And you know, Jeff is an employee of Larry's, and Larry tries to pull the employee card to make him go get tested.
Yeah, I'm telling you what to do because I'm your boss.
I'm your boss, yeah. And Jeff, you can see the look on Jeff's face. He's just like, oh, come on.
Well, yeah, you can't.
Don't do this,
like,
to me.
Yeah, it's not within the professional scope of their relationship to go and get a test. Like, that's a personal thing, not a professional thing. So, you know, yes. He might be his boss, but he has no power over medical decisions.
Yes, I know. But no, Jeff has his doubts as well, qualms. Of course, Omar Jones, the PI, walks out of the elevator and Larry greets him. Omar asks what Larry's doing, and Larry says that he is an alibi for Pete and he needs to spot him in a lineup. Omar asks if he has a problem with his receptionist, as she was distressed after the call. Larry apologizes as he asks how the adoption leads are going, and Omar says that he may have something very soon. A police detective walks up to greet Omar as Omar leaves. The detective invites Larry and Jeff to the lineup room. They walk in and Jeff offers to take the test, as Larry is happy to hear that. They step up to the glass as the suspects all line up. Larry points out Pete, who's second from the right away. As the detective asks when they had dinner, Larry explains what he knows about Pete. The detective says the man who they're pointing at is a known felon, and he goes by aliases like Peter Hagen or Peter the Talk, as well as others. The detective asks again if they've had dinner with this man, and they both say yes. The detective calls another line and says to let him go and that they're done here. Larry and Jeff are waiting to get their tests done at the office, at the doctor's office, as Jeff regrets his decision. The nurse walks out and says that they are both compatible with Richard, as Jeff says, "Good night, nurse," which mildly offends the nurse as they bicker about if they know about the saying. And very interesting. Usually something like this would be between Larry and another party, but this time Jeff is having a bit of bickering with the nurse.
Yeah, normally he wouldn't.
You don't see that often.
No, normally he wouldn't be the person who's just, yeah, like arguing to argue. He would just like shrug his shoulders or just not care. Yeah, I don't know. Just, I don't know why they did it, but it was funny.
I think he's just pissed off that he's like positive. Like, he, you know, he's a match as well. And he's like Larry. He wants to back out.
Yeah, no, that's probably true.
Yeah, it's probably just all his emotions. And yeah, it's just weird how, yeah, he is arguing for argument's sake. We've never seen Jeff do that before.
No, and I mean, you know, he'd probably be a bit tenser than normal. Like normally Jeff's pretty easygoing. Like normally he's like not too bothered by much. Yeah, but you know, potentially having to donate a kidney to a friend is, you know, it's a lot to think about.
A lot to think about, yeah. So in that moment, he says, "Good night, nurse."
Yeah.
And for those who don't know what "good night, nurse" means, it's just kind of like a final expression, isn't it? It's just like, we're done, basically.
Yeah, it's
like a finality, right?
Yeah, I think so. I've heard it a few times, but yeah, I think that's what it means.
It's like something's final. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Larry is at Richard's office and he apologizes to his PA and asks where Richard is and what it's regarding as she starts crying again. Larry tries to console her. He embraces her and begins stroking her hair, and she asks why he touched her hair, and she says that Larry is inappropriate. Richard runs out and everyone begins yelling. The receptionist leaves. Larry says he was consoling her and he wasn't coming on to her. Richard is saying that Larry is behaving weirdly recently. As Larry asks if Richard got the good news about him and Jeff, he tries to convince Richard to get Jeff's kidney and that Larry is much older than Jeff. Richard says that they could either flip a coin or do eeny, meeny, miny, mo to decide whose kidney Richard gets, as he tells her to stay away from his receptionist. And they're having a bit of an argument in the scene where Richard says, oh, she's leaving. Is she leaving or quitting? And Larry and Richard are debating that. Like, did she leave for good or is she just like upset and she'll come back?
Yeah, obviously. It's important to know, you know, does she just need some air or is she gone for good? I'd be surprised if she quit for good because, you know, she's obviously concerned about his well-being. She obviously likes working for him and respects him and is concerned. You think that she would be there to support him, not abandon him. Like, obviously it's hard for her to deal with, but I think it would make Richard's situation harder if she left.
Yeah, yeah, of course, because, you know, he needs that assistance and they're probably really close friends too.
Yeah. But
yeah. But what about Richard? I mean, what about Larry rather, like, stroking her hair? Like, his hand was, like, around the back of her head, like he was about to go in for a kiss or something. Like, you don't stroke, you know, maybe, like, if you're hugging a child, you know, you stroke their head or something, but you don't, like, do that to a strange lady. I mean, that's fucked up. I can see why she was upset.
Yeah, look, I don't think, yeah, I mean, everyone's boundaries are different, but, you know, if you're consoling someone over difficult news, like, you know, a lot of the time you're just in the moment, like, you're not thinking where is okay to put my hand or not. You know, I think it was just, you know, obviously Larry crossed a line that she didn't like and she's okay to think that, but, you know, I don't think Larry was trying to be creepy or I don't think he even thought about, like, is placing my hand here okay? I just think he, you know, it's just a natural thing to, you know, when you're consoling someone to just put your hand. Yeah. I don't think it was creepy or malicious, but obviously she didn't like it. And, you know, just a mistake, an unintentional mistake by Larry, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, let's go with one of your theories that you mentioned before about Cheryl, you know, like saying either Cheryl's having enough sex with Larry or none at all. What if we went with the theory that you said before that they're not having enough sex, if any at all? And then maybe like Larry was like holding another woman. And then maybe in the moment he was getting a bit, you know, because it's been a little while. Maybe he was like, you know, instinctively just like stroking like another woman's hair or something. Like, what if he wasn't like, he wasn't outwardly wanting to have sex with her, but maybe he was just like subtly like just doing it, you know, subconsciously.
Yeah, he was just a tiny bit extra horny. So he was a bit more touchy-feely because he wasn't getting his relief at home. Yeah, look, that's possible.
Yeah, I mean, if we go by that theory that you did.
That's possible.
Yeah, I mean, like, he wasn't actively going to, like, want to have sex with her, but maybe, like, you know, a woman, he can, you know, the smell, you know, like, the feel, maybe it's like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm upset, you know, I'm trying to console her, but then, you know, like, maybe, you know, because he instinctively goes for Cheryl's bum. Obviously, you know, he's not thinking enough about the PA to go for her bum as well. So he kind of just goes for something a bit more less sexual.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he still has those feelings, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's just a tiny bit extra horny, and he just goes a bit further than maybe he would normally.
Yeah. That's if we went by one of your theories, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's another one you can look at it too.
Yeah, that's perfectly plausible.
But possible as well. Probably unlikely, but possible with that theory, yeah.
All right. So there you go. You got your choice. Two kidneys.
Wow.
Of course.
Very grateful, man.
You know, I am considerably older than him. I know, I'm not going to... I don't want to get into that whole game, but, you know, he's... It's a difference when you're... younger, obviously.
Yeah, kidney's a kidney, he's a kidney.
I'm not so sure about that, but, you know, whatever.
They're over at Jeff's house, and Marty Funkhauser is there. He is about to flip a coin to see if Jeff or Larry becomes the donor, but they decide on eeny, meeny, miny, moe instead. Marty says that he praises both of them for what they're doing, and Larry says that maybe Marty should get tested, and Marty's like, oh, no. He also wants to back out of getting tested.
Yeah.
It's like the theme of this episode. Like, no one, like, everyone wants to feel sorry for their friend and wish them well, but they don't want to actively do anything to make their situation better if it compromises their body. Marty's like, no, he just brushes it off. So, no, I'm good. Yeah, I don't need to.
I'm happy to go so far, but not that far.
Indeed, yes. Larry offers to be Eeny. Martin does Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe, and it lands on Larry. He thinks he won as he is out, but Jeff claims that he is the loser, quote unquote, as he is it. Marty clarify that Larry has to be the kidney donor, and they all begin to argue. Susie walks in and asks what's going on. Larry tries to get her opinion. Susie agrees with the other two that Larry is it. And of course, she never misses an opportunity to shit all over her husband. She says that Jeff's a fat fuck, and he needs to save his kidney for his children in case they ever need one. And Larry will be the donor. Larry walks off in defeat. So yeah, Susie just can't help herself, you know, shitting on her husband.
Yeah,
in that moment.
Yeah, look, I mean, the way she insults
his kidney's too fucking big.
Yeah, the way she insults
too pretty fat. He wouldn't make it through the surgery.
Yeah, like the way that she handles it's pretty brutal. But I think her being reluctant. Well, I mean, she's not just reluctant. She's, you know, she flat out refuses. At the very least, Jeff owes her a conversation of like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? Because it's, you know, it's not something that just affects him. It affects her and their daughter, and he's the breadwinner. So, you know, it's a family conversation. It's not just up to him. So I get why, you know, she would be like, she does have a right to have a say, but the way she goes about it is just not happening. You're fat. Just, you know, it's just too blunt, too brutal.
And you're supposed to save it for your children.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's what she said. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't give it to some, like, you know, she even shits on Richard Lewis saying he's like some drunk or something, you know.
Yeah,
don't like, give it to some fucking drunk alcoholic or something.
It's futile, something like that.
Yeah, extremely. Yeah, but yeah, Susie comes in at the end there, but I enjoyed her jumping in, even if it was for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she just comes in and just stops everything. And no one
stomps on everything, destroys everything, yeah.
Because she's so brutal, and she can just cut through, you know, situations and just, you know, there's no subtlety. It just speaks her mind. It's all out on the table. No one questions it because it's just it's said with such authority. She's just like, no, he's fat. You're not getting his kidney. It's going to the kids. And that's it. Everyone's just like, okay, well, it's settled.
That's fair.
You know, she
and Larry walks off in defeat.
Maybe it's kind of a relief because they don't have to make this. Like, she's come in and just made all the decisions for them.
Yeah, she has. But Larry is obviously very upset.
Yeah, I mean, Larry got the short end of the stick here. But she made a very complicated, convoluted situation very, very final. You know, that's it.
That's it. That's done. And Larry is it.
Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a tiger by the toe. If he hollers, let him go. My mother says to pick this one, and out goes Y-O-U.
Yeah! Yeah! Yeah!
What are you excited about?
What do you mean?
What are you so happy about?
I won!
No, you lost!
I just Y-O-U!
No, you lost! You're out! You're in!
No.
Yes!
No, out goes Y-O-U!
In the final scene, Larry is watching TV on the couch next to their bed and asks Cheryl if he is out. So he's still debating eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Cheryl agrees with what the others said and he is it, meaning he has to be the donor. Cheryl says that he's being a baby about this. And Larry says his good health has been for nothing and that he should have just eaten crap and smoked all, most of his life. He's like, all this healthy lifestyle I've done is all been for this. Cheryl says his kidney donation could have been the reason that he survived the drowning he had back in the Larry David sandwich. So, you know, Cheryl's a very spiritual person, believes in, you know, like God and stuff and, you know, miracles and stuff. So she equates Larry's near-death experience in episode one of season five to the fact that he was destined to give Richard a kidney.
Yeah, I think she's just trying to put a positive spin on a pretty grim situation for everyone. You know, maybe there's a higher power at work here.
At work here, yeah, maybe it's meant to be, yeah. And plus, you know, as blunt and brutal as Susie was, she makes a good point about Jeff. I mean, Jeff isn't the most active.
No, and I mean, just because someone, I mean, I don't fully understand the organ donation process, but I imagine even if someone is a match, there's probably still a whole bunch of criteria that has to be satisfied before the doctors give the final okay.
Exactly. I mean, what if you're a match, but you have like HIV or something?
Yeah.
You know? They've got to like test everything. Yeah. They can't just say, oh yeah, you're good.
Yeah, and I mean, I imagine they would test the health.
Who knows what diseases you have?
Yeah, the health of the patient, like, you know, and I'm sure weight and general health would come into play, you know, like, well, is this kidney, you know, it might be unhealthy in a different way. So, yeah, I think even if Jeff volunteered and Susie was okay with it and it was a match, I think the doctors probably would have prevented it from being the organ of choice because of his weight.
Because of his weight and his lifestyle, yeah. Cheryl massages Larry's shoulders and consoles him. They begin to hug as Larry grabs her bottom once again. Cheryl calls him out for it and she goes back to bed. The news reporter comes up with a report that Pete, our mate, the felon, robbed another Jack in the Box, and that Lewis was working there, and he is in a coma and may not survive. Larry leaps for joy at this, as Lewis could become the donor, as was mentioned when Richard and Larry at the diner. The scene freezes on Larry mid-jump as the credits roll and the theme music starts. So yeah, Larry, you know, that's why I said keep note of Lewis in that previous scene. So yeah, Lewis is basically brain dead, and they could remove his organs. So Larry thinks, I'm out, baby, I'm out, as George would say.
Yeah,
as Danza would say in Seinfeld, I'm out, baby.
Yeah, even though it's sad that Lewis is dead, I mean, no one seemed to care about him anyway or like him. You know, even his own cousin describes him as like not even worth asking, you know, like he doesn't seem to love him or respect him in any way. Yeah, it's kind of, it's the situation's resolved. It's like, well, this dead guy can solve all of our problems, which is kind of grim but also good. It's in typical Curb, the ending is like, well, the solution to the problem is unfortunate, but it's also, there is some good out of it.
Yeah, and you had to have like, you wanted to see Larry in elation, yeah, elated. So yeah, I love how they did like the 80s style, you know, freeze frame at the end.
Yeah,
that's great.
Just pausing mid-jump with him. I mean, he kind of won in a way, like he got the short end of a very, very long stick. And the short end of a very short stick. And, you know, he got an out. So he kind of won.
Well, for now.
Yeah, for now. I mean.
We'll see what happens. We haven't seen the other episodes. Obviously, we watch them week by week. So
yeah. It's, you know, it's a victory for now.
A victory for now. Yeah. He's won this battle. But if he wins the kidney war, we'll find that one out.
True.
Anyway, that was Lewis Needs a Kidney. Out of 5 Larrys, not as good as last week, Steve. I give it 3.5. Enjoyable in parts, but yeah, you know, a few weaknesses here and there. But overall, a reasonably good episode. What about you?
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. 3.5. I didn't think it was as good as last week. Still pretty good. Continuing like a really solid run for season 5 so far. Nothing has really been like matched up to the last half of season 4, season 5 so far. Nothing's been like sublime or, you know, perfect. Nothing's been 4.5 or 5, I think, for me. But maybe I've given a 4.5. I can't remember. But nothing has been as good as the last 5 episodes of season 4. But it's still been like, you know, really solid, really good. So
it's been solid, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only one I've given a 4.5 for so far is The Christ Nail from 2 weeks ago. Yeah. That's the highest rating it's gotten so far. But yeah. Well, as we finish the first half of season 5, let's go to the second half. It might be a situation like season 4, man, where maybe, you know, the episodes 1 to 5 were pretty good, and then 6 to 10, we just blew everything out of the water.
Yeah. Look, even if it maintains this level of quality, I think it would still be an awesome season overall. But hopefully it, you know, we always want everything to get better. So hopefully it does.
Hopefully it does. Fingers crossed. Anyway, that was Curbcast. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate your correspondence. We really appreciate your reviews on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all those ones where you can review. You can leave reviews on those podcast services as well as others. You know, ideally 5 stars if you really enjoy it, but any stars is fine. Whatever you feel, anything helps with the algorithms on those programs. And, you know, so if people want to find a Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast, I type in the name of the show, and we come up in the top results, which is what we want. We want as many people listening to this as we can, of course. Anyway, you can also find us, you can send an email rather, curbcastpod@gmail.com, if you want to say hello, talk about Curb or anything else within reason. You can find us on social media at curbcastpod, and we do have a Patreon page for our burgeoning podcast network, Mishmash Media, patreon.com/mishmashmedia. For $1 a month, you can support our very, 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 very small podcast network, which we are slowly growing. So any of those help us out very much, and all those links are in today's show notes. My name's Ivan.
And I'm Stephen.
And we'll see you next week for season 5, episode 6 of Curb. You take care of yourselves and each other. Bye. Thanks for listening. This podcast is part of Mishmash Media, an independent podcast network. Follow us on social media at Mishmash Media AU or support us on Patreon. All those links are in the show notes.